software in a medical device would be the software that is actually integrated into the medical device itself.
Hello and welcome to episode 57 of the MedTech Podcast. You join me, your host, Karandeep Singh Badwell. And on this episode, we have Veronica Michaliuk, Digital Health Principal, and Sam D. Lead at HTD Health, a company specializing in the planning, designing, and development of custom healthcare software. Veronica is an experienced professional with a diverse background in the fields of biomedical engineering, international business, and public health. Her career began as a biomedical engineer, where she contributed to the developments of various biomedical devices, including a wireless ECG system. She then worked in South Korea in the neuroscience department, and after that focused her career on digital health solutions and consulting in the medical device space. In this episode, we delve into the world of software medical devices, explore the agile and waterfall approaches in software development and their application to regulated medical devices. We discover the crucial role of software in medical devices, uncover how some companies unintentionally market unregulated medical products, and learn how to stay updated with the ever-evolving regulations. Welcome to the show, Veronica. How are you today?
Thank you so much, Karandeep. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm doing great. And you, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's a pleasure having you on. So as somebody who is very well versed in software medical devices, for the listeners today, what is it exactly about a software that makes it a medical device?
You know, it's a very good question. You know, I can say that as somebody famously wrote that software is eating the world right now, and the same happens in actually medical device field. So what does it actually mean that software becomes a medical device? So it must meet some criteria defined but by FDA, for example. And FDA defines SAMD using the description set by International Medical Device Regulators Forum, which is IMDRF in short. So they say that SAMD is a software as medical device, is a software that is intended to be used for one or more medical purposes without actually being part of the medical device. So this intended use can be like they diagnose, treat, prevent, or monitor any disease or health condition. So, for instance, a software application, you know, that is used on a smartphone or even a smartwatch that we now have, and this software can monitor a heart rate or blood glucose level, can do so as well, can be classified as SAMD. Another example could be an AI system, you know, designated to analyze medical images for sign of disease like cancer or others, would also be example of SAMD. But you might think, you know, like some fitness apps on your smartphone, are these SAMD or not SAMD? So here, you know, it really depends. There are lots of like wellness and fitness tracking apps. And if they do not diagnose or monitor or, you know, the diseases, they will not be classified at that. But you can later on also discuss maybe details about this. But what I also want to highlight, you know, the difference between SAMD, software as medical device, and SIMD, software in medical device. Because SAMD, as I mentioned, refers to software applications, you know, that serve a medical purpose without being part of this, right, of this hardware. So it can run actually on your smartphone, on a computer, on a telephone, and this can be, again, an app that interprets ECG, electrocardiogram. So again, it can run on your phone, on your smartwatch. But SIMD, software in a medical device, would be the software that is actually integrated into the medical device itself. So if we stay within the cardiology, let's imagine a pacemaker that must have a software inside to actually run and be able to work. So this in SIMD, in SIMD, software is an integral part of a hardware. So I hope, you know, now it's it will be a little bit clearer for our audience.
Definitely so. So I'm glad you also mentioned SIMD as well, because that's kind of the one that's sometimes forgotten about.
So following on from that, we also have this concept of medical software, which does not always fall under the definition of a medical device. In what situations would a company want to avoid being a medical device?
You know, that's a very good question, actually. So we should actually start by analyzing your company strategy, by analyzing your market, where you want to launch your device or software, right? It also refers to, again, coming back to the intended use of your device, because if your software actually diagnoses, monitors, and analyzes and meets the requirements set by IMDRF or like FDA in US, then it will be the software as medical device, right? But if your company, for example, decides that they can meet all the user needs, for example, without being the medical device, then they can follow, they can just avoid being a software as medical device. So for example, you know, there are different factors that we should consider, because like time factor. So the time it takes to actually product, from concept to the market, to launching in a market, to develop a software as medical device, it's definitely much longer than just the software itself, the regular software or just medical software, right? Because there are tons of requirements that you must follow in order to create this software as medical device. And also in software as medical device, testing is really strict. You must have like testing protocols, testing plans, testing reports. Of course, you should have that for the medical software as well, but it's not as rigorous as for the software as medical device. And another thing can be, for example, liability. If you follow the software as medical device path, the liability is also much higher because you are classified as a medical device. And then the risk, the financial risk for the company is higher as well. Another thing I have to mention is the requirement from FDA as well, the post-market surveillance. Also, if you are software as medical device, you are subject to ongoing monitoring and reporting requirements, even after they have been approved and are on the market. So these activities also add to the complexity and also to financial aspect of the organization. And also device updates and any changes. If you receive, for example, if your medical device is class 2 or class 1 and you follow 510K, let's say, clearance, you obtain that, or you follow the Novo, you are on the market, but then you make some significant changes to your intended use of the device, you must go through the process all over again. But if you are at the medical software, you can avoid these processes. So as I mentioned, there are many advantages and disadvantages of being like software as medical device or not. But I would recommend for somebody that is thinking about whether to follow the medical device software path or just medical software, is to really discuss it maybe even with experts and to analyze your purpose and your users. And then maybe even think about reimbursement, because if you are classified as a medical device, then you might be able to be classified to get reimbursement and, work with payers. So it's really the question, your business question on the organizational level. I know it's not so easy to answer. It's a complex question, but a very important one.
Very much so, Veronica. And you probably see this too. Sometimes you go on the App Store, you look some software online. And do you ever come across companies that don't realize that they're a medical device?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you can do so. And even the example, like everybody knows Apple Watch, right? So Apple Watch, some time ago, they were just like regular, let's say, software, medical software. But now, because Apple Watch can actually detect some heart abnormalities, they are classified as medical device class 2. There are some apps on like app stores that, for example, maybe I will not say the names, but They really promote, for example, mental health. They have all of the like really great features there, but they do not claim that they will diagnose your mental health state, or they will not provide you any treatment. They just say that they promote that. But this is kind of on the edge, I can say. Also, there's many fitness tracking apps. You might be wondering, okay, but this actually fitness tracking app gives me so many different data and analysis of that. But again, they do not say if the fitness tracking app will just track your data and will not make any analysis of that or like monitoring when it comes to really diagnosing your health condition, then again, they are not classified as medical device.
So another term that I see used quite a lot in software, not just software medical devices, is of course agile and waterfall in terms of software development. So for the listeners today, what exactly do these terms mean, and where and when, or even why, would they be used in software medical device development?
Very good question, actually. You know, so waterfall and agile, they are two big topics in medical device and software as medical device. So the term agile and waterfall refer to two different project management methodologies. And they are very commonly used in software development, including the development of software as medical device. So I will begin with a waterfall. So the waterfall methodology follows the linear and sequential flow of stages. So you can imagine, you can think about it as a waterfall, you know, cascading from one step to the other. And that's why it's a waterfall methodology. You start at the top with like conception of the project, and then you flow down through the stages of like initiation, analysis, design, development, testing, implementation, and then maintenance. So it's like, as you can see, from step zero until, you know, the end. And the finding really characteristic of waterfall is that each stage must be completed before the next one begins. And there's typically no going back to previous stage without like significant effort or cost. So in the context of SAMD, actually, the waterfall method provides a clear structured approach, but gives you lots of limitations also, because if you want to make some change, the cost might be very high. And you know, you can also, on the contrary, the agile methodology, it gives you lots of flexibility, as it's a very adaptive methodology. At the heart of agile methodology, you know, there are four core values that actually serves as a guide, for the process and mindset also of agile teams. So, you know, these four main core values are individuals and interactions over processes and tools. So we pay attention for like the team, the people, then working software over comprehensive documentation. And I will come back to this one in a second, because you might already start thinking, hey, like in SAMD you need documentation and this is crucial. I will come back to this in a second. Then the third one is customer collaboration over contract negotiation. Again, customer first in agile and providing the value. Then responding to change over following a plan. So this is totally contrary to waterfall, right? Because in waterfall, we have the plan and we follow the stages. We must complete first stage before starting the second. And here in agile, we are agile and adaptive, and we can respond to change. So we start in agile methodology, as we normally do. We start with a product vision. So we gather the requirements, we define the product, and in agile, we call it product backlog. So product backlog is a set of requirements of like user stories and tasks that then development team takes and works on during sprints. And sprints are iterations. Most often they are like 2 weeks or 4 weeks long iterations that during which agile teams, scrum teams, work on the software. And each sprint begins with a planning meeting where the team actually decides what to work on based on the priority and estimated time for the completion. And at the end of each sprint, there is a sprint review. If you work for the client, then you know you invite the client during the sprint review, and you show the progress, the iteration. And also in the SAMD, there is requirement to have design review. Sometimes it can be combined with a sprint review, and the only difference is that during the design review, you must have an independent reviewer. This is the person that doesn't have a direct impact on the product itself, but can come to the design review meeting and can provide you, you know, like with opinion from like the other point of view, the other set of eyes. And this is actually required by the regulations as well. So after doing this design review, you can start another iteration, another sprint from the beginning, from like the sprint planning. So, you know, here I want to also like mention again this documentation, right? Because at first glance, it may seem that Agile with a focus on working software over comprehensive documentation may not fit with the strict regulatory requirements and demands of software as medical device. Because in software as medical device, extensive documentation is really required. But again, when we take a closer look at Agile and we think about this whole process, you will see that it really works together very well. So what I want to highlight is Agile doesn't say working software without documentation, but it says working software, you know, with necessary and needed documentation. And I would like to recommend our listeners to read the very good, actually, reading. It's called AMI-TIR45. It's about actually how to use Agile methodology in a regulated environment. So maybe to give you a little bit more context and like, let's put some theory into practice. So let's imagine a typical Agile sprint in SAMD context. So the goal of the sprint could be developing a new feature of the software, right? And like normally you'd assign tasks for the development team, like designing, coding, testing. Another task could be completing a documentation. So the documentation could involve capturing user requirements for the new feature, a design specification, architecture design, detailed design, results for testing. So that different tasks, documentation tasks, could be also assigned to appropriate team members who have, you know, responsibility for specific tasks. So tech lead or architecture lead would work on the architecture documentation task, and the quality assurance lead would work on the design verification documentation, like report, plan, etc. So when we do so, then the documentation becomes an integral part of each sprint. And it's not kind of seen by the development team as an additional and, you know, difficult task, but it's just part of their development and part of their sprint. And this approach not only actually ensures that the documentation keeps pace with development, but also increases the accuracy and relevance, because we keep the documentation updated and we make sure that we also make any changes, include all the updates when needed, right? So because if the documentation is completed alongside with the development or testing tasks. So, you know, here we can say that, for example, when we are, another example, when you develop a SAMD, you develop a blood glucose monitoring software to monitor the blood glucose level. So in one sprint, you might be focusing on the algorithm that will interpret raw data from a glucose sensor. And the task for the documentation could be document the algorithm that will, you know, perform the specific tasks. And that could be in another paragraph in the documentation. And then the protocols and the test plan would be also specific for this sprint, right? And so also what we do is we create like design, for example, to take an example, also the testing, because testing is very important in SAMD. You can create design verification plan for the whole project. But then when you work in Agile, you can divide this per sprint. So in each and every sprint, what we do, we create design verification plan per sprint, then we create protocol per sprint, and then we have the report also per sprint. And after, you know, we complete all of the sprints, we gather that documentation with full traceability metrics, and that gives us a very good overview with the testing, with full traceability, and still enables us to be agile and adapt to change quickly.
So how exactly did you get involved in this field of Sandy? I'm pretty sure when you stepped out of university, you went that, yes, I'm going to go into software medical device. So how exactly did you get into that field?
Oh, yeah. So that's actually a long story. So myself, I am biomedical engineer by training, and I actually started my career in medical device industry as an engineer. I was working, I was coding. So I was kind of on the other side of that. And myself, I also designed and built a wireless EKG system when I was working as an engineer in Poland. Then, you know, I decided to actually switch a little from the engineering to some science. So I did a research in South Korea in neuroscience department. And after that period, I was like, you know, maybe I should use my engineering and science knowledge and build some business acumen. So I decided to move to US. I went to Miami, and then I did a master's in international business and an MBA there, and actually started to work in a big medical device company there. So since then, I was also using both my engineering and business knowledge. And in this medical device company, I was working in the digital health department. So in digital health, we were working on both medical software, but also on software as medical device, as we had different departments in there. So actually started from medical devices, working on the SIMD, actually software in medical device, was coding the hardware, then moved into like digital health space and software as medical device. And currently, you know, in my current role at HDD Health, I am leading software as medical device, as we are not developing hardware itself. We are not manufacturing hardware, but we are focusing on software itself. So the long story short, you know, started in hardware kind of medical device industry, but then transitioned to software in medical device. But, you know, it's just the years of experience and working hands-on on that. As I do think that this really, this field is still very new. As you might see that the FDA keeps on releasing new guidelines because software really is evolving so quickly. So it's just hard to leave the university with that knowledge. As I think somebody, you know, you must start somewhere, and then you just develop the skills alongside when you work that, and you put the theory into practice.
So for the listeners today who want to learn more about software medical devices, aside from the standards and regulations, where would you say are the best places to start? What resources would you recommend?
Oh, you know, actually, great question. So 2 days ago, I released my first article from the SAMD series. So what we do, we at HDD, we release every 2 weeks articles about software as medical device. And the idea is to build a complete guide for software as medical device, so that if you have no idea what software as medical device is, and if you start with our first article that actually explains what software's medical device is and explain its classes, and if you complete the our guide, then you should really know what SAMD is, how to manage the risk, what are different classes of software's medical device, which regulatory pathway is optimal for you, and also how to use agile methodology in there. So I plan to actually combine all of my knowledge and put it on a paper and release that to our audience. And every 2 weeks I will publish that on LinkedIn You know, if you would like to find this, definitely this one. But again, also, your podcast is a great place for the listeners, because you invite, you know, Karandeep, you invite great listeners and great people, and myself, I'm also listening to your podcast. So I would recommend our listeners to check out some previous episodes, some different episodes, because I do think that everybody could find something good for themselves. And, you know, I would also just recommend to maybe even do a simple Google search and check some new new articles. But again, not all of the resources are, you know, trustworthy. So if you look for some resources, I would recommend you to really make sure that this is a trustworthy source. And again, I would mention this AMI TIR45. It's a great place actually to learn about Agile and software as medical device itself.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning my podcast, Veronica. And I want to make it clear, I didn't pay you to say that, did I?
No, no, of course not. I just like it. I like it and I listen to it, so that's why.
Definitely so. So, of course, Veronica, you seem that you're very sort of software-minded. What do you do outside of work? Do you develop software, or is it a case of software is what you do as work, and then once you're out of work, you're doing something else?
You know, so I love my work. It's my passion. So it's sometimes even hard for me to stop working, because I really love it. Like, and I think about like the end user, the patient, and when I see that our software's medical device works, it's just amazing. But apart from that, I always say I'm a bike addict. I am a former soccer player, a professional soccer player. I used to play in a Polish team, but then decided to move into a biomedical field. So apart from work, I ride a bike a lot. I travel a lot and I hike a lot. I just came back from Switzerland, where I was like hiking, in Norway, where I was hiking. Last year I did, I climbed Kilimanjaro. It was a very nice, you know, trip, I can say. I pushed my limits very hard, and I would recommend that for everybody. If you want to push your limits, if you want to check yourself, go and hike Kilimanjaro. It's not very demanding when it comes to technical, like from technical perspective, but the height is... it's difficult, like for me at least, because, you know, like 6,000 meters high mountain, it's a good challenge. And next year I'm going to do Machu Picchu. So traveling, you know, sport and learning languages. I speak 5.5 so far, and my goal is to speak 10. But let's see what will happen.
Yep, so digital detox is what I'm getting from you, hiking and cycling, etc.
Yes, definitely. Yes. After work, you know, cycling, hiking, it's good to disconnect, because I have to tell you that sometimes during the hike or bike, you know, you just come up with such a great idea. You don't even like, you know, realize that sometimes during the kind of this digital disconnect, your brain just works and the neurons, you know, work better. And then you come up with just great ideas, and then you come back to work, you are fresh and energized.
So, Veronica, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. What one piece of advice would you be leaving the listeners with?
Thank you so much again for having me here, Karandeep. So what I would say is, even though Samdi might look like very complex and difficult field, I would tell you, do not really be scared. There are so many different experts that can help you. There are so many different resources that can also help you to understand this field. And it's really worth to be part of software's medical device, because at the end, you know, we have this patient that, thanks to your device, software's medical device, can have better life, or your software's medical device can save their lives. So definitely do not be scared, but accept the challenge and everything will be okay.
Thank you very much for your time, Veronica.
Thank you for listening to episode 57 of the MedTech Podcast. If you have not already done so, please subscribe. If you wish to learn more about Veronica, you can connect with her online or visit a company website, the links of which are provided in the description. If there are any particular topics or guests you would like for me to have on the show in future, then feel free to reach out.